From the Archives of the Key West Literary Seminar, 2010. This is poet Maxine Kuman.
I'm going to start with a little poem called Looking for Luck in Bangkok. Probably not true anymore, but 30 years ago, you would see this at outdoor markets right in the center of town. Looking for luck in Bangkok. Often at markets, I see people standing in line to walk under an elephant. They count out a few coins, then crouch to slip beneath the wrinkly umbrella that smells of dust and old age and a thousand miracles. They unfold on the other side, blessed with long life, good luck, solace from grief, unruly children, and certain liver complaints. Conspicuous Caucasian, I stoop to make my turn. The feet of my elephant are stout as planted pines. His trunk completes this honest structure, this tractable, tusked, and deeply creased, endangered shelter. I squat in his aromatic shade, reminded of stale bedclothes, my mother's pantry shelves of cloves and vinegar, as if there were no world of drought, no parasites, no ivory poachers, my good luck running in as his runs out. And here's a little poem about the birth of a foal called Praise Be. That was what we named her. 11 months, 2 weeks in the womb, and this one sticks a foreleg out, frail as a dowel, quivering in the unfamiliar air. And then the other leg, cocked at the knee at first, then straightening. And here's the head, a big blind fish, thrashing inside its see-through sack. And for a moment, the panting mare desists, lies still as death. I tear the caul, look into eyes as innocent, as skittery as minnows. 3 heaves, the shoulders pass. The hips emerge. Fluid as snakes, the hind legs trail out glistering. The whole astonished filly, still attached, draws breath and whinnies a treble tremolo that leaps in her mother, who nickers a low-key response. Let them prosper, the dams and their sucklings. Let nothing inhibit their heedless growing. Let them raise up on sturdy pasterns and trot out in light summer rain onto the long, lazy, unfenced fields of heaven. I enjoyed Mark's Villanelle, and it's inspiring me to read one. In fact, this is a double Villanelle. I'll never write another. It's called The Nuns of Childhood, Two Views. The first view is that of Joe Parisi, who a former editor of Poetry Magazine, and the second is my own. And of the second, I need to say that I grew up next door to the convent of the Sisters of St. Joseph and went to school there until in the third grade I stole a rosary, and my parents kind of woke up shocked and sent me off to public school. The Nuns of Childhood, Two Views. One. Oh, where are they now, your harridan nuns, who thumped on young heads with a metal thimble and punished with rulers your upturned palms? 3 smacks for failing in long division, 1 more to instill the meaning of humble. As the twig is bent, said your harridan nuns. Once a visiting bishop, serene at the close of a mass through which he had shambled, smiled upon you with upturned palms. Because this is my feast day, he ended, you may all have a free afternoon. In the scramble of whistles and cheers, one harridan nun, fiercest of all the parochial coven, Sister Pascala, without preamble, raged, I protest, and rapping on palms at random, had bodily to be restrained. Oh, God's perfect servant is kneeling on brambles wherever they sent her, your harridan nun, enthroned as a symbol with upturned palms. 2. Oh, where are they now, my darling nuns, whose heads were shaved under snowy wimples, who rustled dryly inside their gowns, disciples of oxidol, starch, and bluing, their backyard clothesline a pious example? They have flapped out of sight, my darling nuns. Seamless as fish, made all of one skin, their language secret, these gentle vestals were wedded to Christ inside their gowns. O Mother Superior Rosarine, on whose lap the privileged visitor lolled, I, at age 4, with my darling nuns, with Sister Elizabeth, Sister Anne, am offered to Jesus, the Jewish child next door who worships your ample black gown, your eyebrows, those thick mustachioed twins, your rimless glasses, your ring of pale gold. Who can have stolen my darling nuns? Who rustles dryly inside my gown? Moving on, a little bear poem is coming up. And this is called Rendezvous. It's based on an Indian myth from the Pacific Northwest, the Tlingit Indians, the Rendezvous. How narrow the bear trail through the forest, one paw print following the other, in the manner of good King Wenceslas, tagged by his faithful serf. How, according to the legend, a bear is able to feel shame, and if a woman meets a male bear, she should take off all her clothes, thereby causing him to run away. How I meet a male bear. How I am careful not to insult him. I unbutton my blouse. He takes out his teeth. I slip off my skirt. He turns his back and works his way out of his pelt, which he casts to the ground for a rug. He smells of honey and garlic. I am wet with human fear. How can he run away unfurred? How can I without my clothes? How we prepare a new legend. Well, I don't know whether I have the heart to do this. I'm going to read a very sad horse poem. It's the title of my book, Jack and Other New Poems. Jack. How pleasant the yellow butter melting on white kernels, the meniscus of red wines that coats the insides of our goblets, where we sit with sturdy friends as old as we are after shucking the garden's last silver queen and setting husks and stalks aside for the horses, the last two of our lives still noble to look upon, our first foal, now a bossy mare of 28, which calibrates to 84 in people years, and my chestnut gelding, not exactly a youngster at 22. Every year, the end of summer, lazy and golden, invites grief and regret. Suddenly, it's 1980. Winter batters us. Winds strike like cruelty out of Dickens. Somehow, we have 7 horses for 6 stalls. One of them, a big-nosed roan gelding, calm as a president's portrait, lives in the rectangle that leads to the stalls. We call it the motel lobby. Wise old campaigner, he dunks his hay in the water bucket to soften it, then visits the others who hang their heads over their Dutch doors. Sometimes he sprawls out flat to nap in his commodious quarters. That spring in the bustle of grooming and riding and shoeing, I remember I let him go to a neighbor I thought was a friend, and the following fall she sold him down the river. I meant to, but never did go looking for him to buy him back, and now my old guilt is flooding this twilit table, My guilt is ghosting the candles that pale us to skeletons, the ones we must all become in an as yet unspecified order. Oh, Jack, tethered in what rough stall alone, did you remember that one good winter? I think I should hustle along here. I'm going to read a Robert Frost poem and then a little final poem. Breadloaf, just so you'll know, is in Middlebury, Vermont, and it's the oldest of the writers' conferences. And Robert Frost lived just down the road, and he would come up to the conference and give readings and exhortations and incriminations. And he was very old. This is very close to the end of his life, and I was one of the poets at his feet. The final poem. Breadloaf, late August, the chemistry of a New England fall already inviting the swamp maples to flare. Magisterial in the white wicker rocker, Robert Frost at rest after giving a savage reading, holding nothing back, his rage at dying, not yet, as he barged his chair forth, then back. Don't sit there mumbling in the shadows. Call yourselves poets, all but a handful scattered. Fate rearranged us happy few at his feet. He rocked us until midnight. I took away these close-lipped dicta. Look up from the page. Pause between poems. Say something about the next one. Otherwise, the audience will coast. They can't take in half of what you're giving them. Reaching for the knob of his cane, he rose and flung this exit line. Make every poem your final poem. And I am going to close with, if I can find it, good heavens, where has it gone? I want to read Seven Caveats in May. If you will bear with me, I'm going to read another bear poem. This is an autobiographical poem. I swear this is true. Seven Caveats in May. When the dog whines at 5 a.m., do not make your first mistake and let him out. When he starts to bark in a furious tom-tom rhythm and you can just discern a shadowy fainting taking place under the distant hemlocks, do not seize the small sledge from the work table and fly out there in your nightgown and unlaced high tops, preparing to whack this, the ninth of its kind in the last 10 weeks, over the head before it can quill your canine. But it's not a porcupine. It's a big, black, angry bear. Now your dog has put him up a tree and plans to keep him there. A perfect piece of work by any hound. Do not run back and grab the manure fork, thinking you can keep the prongs between you and the elevated bear long enough to dart in and corral your critter. Isn't it true bears come down slower than they go up? Half an hour later, do not give up, go in the house, and call the cops. The dispatcher regrets having to report there's no patrol car at this time. The state police are covering. No doubt the nearest trooper wearing his smoky bear Stetson is 40 miles up the highway. When your closest neighbor, big, burly Smitty, works his way into his jeans and roars up your dirt road in his four-wheel diesel truck, strides over the slash pile and hauls your hound back, by now you've thrown something on over your not quite diaphanous nightgown. Do not forget to thank him with a six-pack. Do not fail to take your feeders in on April 1, despite the arriving birds' insistent clamor, and do not put them out again until the 1st of December. Thank you.
This recording is brought to you by the Key West Literary Seminar, a nonprofit organization dedicated to the celebration of the written word and the support of American writers. Each January, we explore a different literary theme through lectures, panel presentations, readings, informal gatherings, and discussions. Our Writers' Workshop program is open to writers of all levels, and we provide financial assistance and scholarship opportunities to writers, teachers, and librarians. Visit us on the web at www.kwls.org. Our Audio Archives Project is sponsored in part by the State of Florida, Department of State, Division of Cultural Affairs, the Florida Council on Arts and Culture, and the National Endowment for the Arts.